Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is Paul Wolf, president of the New York Coalition for Open Government, which describes itself as a nonpartisan, not-for-profit organization comprised of journalists, activists, attorneys, educators, news media organizations, and other concerned citizens who value open government and freedom of information. You can find out more at NYOPEN, NewYorkOpenGov.org. Again, those are the initials, NYOPENGOV.org. Welcome back, Paul. Always a pleasure to find out how we're being screwed.
Well, thanks for having me. That's quite the intro.
So how open is New York State government, and how insidious is the result of the answer of your question?
Well, I would say New York government is not very open based on the reports that we have done. We do about four reports a year where we seek to document compliance with the open meetings law and the freedom of information law. And every report that we do, the results are failing grades. So it is a pretty dismal state as far as open government goes.
How important is that? I mean, you know, there'll be people listening to this radio show and they'll be saying, you know, who cares? We always hear, you know, we're not getting all the information we need. But is it important?
It's extremely important. I mean, the only way to hold our government officials accountable is by being able to obtain information. You have a right to ask for documents as to things that they're voting on and addressing. You have a right to observe them in meetings, although they frequently will go behind closed doors for improper reasons. You have a right to see the meeting documents before the meetings occur, but frequently they're not posted online. So, I mean, the only way to have a democracy that works is to provide information to folks.
Okay, so you're not supposed to, you know, make decisions out of the public view when it affects the public. So I hate to put it this way, but I don't know what else to do. Two guys standing in front of the urinal discussing politics. How do you put a stop to that?
Well, I mean, that happens, and that's not illegal. I mean, the problem is whenever there's a majority of the boards at the urinal, that's different.
Yeah, but, you know, you get two guys who really are the vortex of the organization, and everybody goes along with them, and then they stand up in front of the urinal and they say, let's go this way, this way, and this way. So yeah, they're making a decision even though it's not a full open meeting.
Yeah, I mean, the law can only go so far. So, you know, at this point, you know, long as the majority of the board is not through a series of emails or phone calls reaching a decision, or at the urinal reaching a decision, but all these things are very hard to prove, which is, you know, a big part of the problem.
Okay, let's go back a little bit. Tell us a little bit more about yourself and the organization.
Sure. I'm an attorney. I worked for 17 years for different government entities. And while working for government, I encountered issues regarding the open meetings law and freedom of information law. So I was on the inside telling them, well, you got to release this information, and dealing with their resistance to do so. I'm now in private practice as an attorney, and open government is still something that is important to me. So I formed this group, the New York Coalition for Open Government, and found that there are like-minded souls all across the state of New York that have been having difficulties in obtaining information and observing meetings. So we are the only group that monitors compliance with the law by, you know, checking and doing reports. There is no entity in New York State that does that. And that's a problem as well.
So, Paul, I'm sure there are a lot of people listening to the program who'd like to know, do you make any money out of doing this?
No, it's a complete volunteer organization. We do not have any paid staff. I serve as president of the board and don't receive any payment. We charge a $20 membership fee to join, and we use that just to help offset some of the costs. And right now we have members in 24 counties across New York State, and we're continuing to grow, which is great.
So yes or no, is this a losing battle?
I don't think it is a losing battle. It's certainly a difficult battle, and I think it's too important of a battle to not engage in. Certainly if we do nothing, it just gets worse and worse. So I'm pleased that there are other individuals across the state willing to volunteer their time to focus on this issue. And through media efforts in large part, such as your show and others, we're able to, you know, shine a light and sometimes just embarrass elected officials to do the right thing.
So if it gets worse and worse, I take it we're in worse shape now than we were before.
Well, yeah, I don't know about before, but I can tell you that presently things don't look good. And, you know, we always have governors and politicians who promise that they're going to be, you know, very transparent. And we see that's often not the case.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about some of the specifics. Let's talk about FOIL, F-O-I-L. Now, I'm willing to bet that a lot of people driving along in their cars or sitting in their houses listening to the radio don't have the slightest idea what a FOIL request is, so you'll tell us. And you'll tell us how to get one.
Sure. It stands for the Freedom of Information Law, and you have a right to request information from your city hall, town board, county. Maybe you saw an article in the newspaper how they approved a contract for $1 million, and you say, you know what, I'd like to take a look and see what that's about. You have a right to send a written request. You can do it by email, you can do it by fax, you can drop it off, and you have a right to say, I'd like to see a copy of this. And they're supposed to give it to you pretty quickly, although that's not often the case. And they may charge you a copying fee of, you know, 25 cents a page, which is, you know, something we just have to deal with. But you have a right to request information. And so I hope people do so. And, you know, it runs the gamut. Whatever you want to request, you can request. There are certain things they can deny your request for. But you have a right to ask.
Okay, so let's assume Alan Chartok sees something and says, that'll be an interesting column. Or maybe you want to write something about that. And I put in what's called a FOIL request, Freedom of Information Law request. How long do they have? And then if they don't do it on time, how do I get them to do it?
Sure. So they're supposed to acknowledge your request within 5 business days, at least send you an email back or a letter stating we got your request, and they're supposed to give you an estimate as to how long it'll take. And they typically say, well, we got your request. It's going to take us, you know, 30 days to gather this information. Before the 30 days comes and goes, they're supposed to, you know, provide you the information or give you a reason as to why you're not entitled to it. Oftentimes they say, well, we need another 30 days. After the first 30 days, and if you haven't received your information, you have a right to appeal. And it's just administrative, again, sending another letter to a person who's identified as the appeals officer saying, hey, I requested this, 30 days have gone by and they haven't given it to me. Many times the appeals will prompt, you know, them to do something. And then after that, if you don't get it after the appeal, unfortunately, your only result is to hire an attorney and sue, which is certainly not an easy thing to do.
Yeah, right. What are the chances of that working out for you? And so, you know, theoretically, you should be able to get the information. But in fact, somebody's standing around saying, this is a little dangerous. We don't want to give this to them. Have you seen anybody ever get punished for that?
Unfortunately, in New York State, there are no real penalties. Other states, there are. In other states, fines can be imposed. In other states, violating the Freedom of Information Law can be a misdemeanor charge. And in New York, we don't have that. Your recourse is to go to court, have the judge order them to give it to you, and hope that the judge orders them to also pay your attorney fees, because, you know, it's expensive to hire a lawyer and go to court. Mm-hmm. But we need to have some more penalties in New York. We simply do not have that, and that's one of the things our group is looking to accomplish as well.
Well, accidentally on purpose, as my mom used to say, we don't have it. We don't have it because the powers that be don't want it. They don't want to get held responsible for this, right?
It is true that they don't want to be held accountable, and anything that, you know, any law has to be passed by the state legislature. So, you know, it really requires pressure and media attention to make them act.
So what is it about the state legislature that doesn't do what the people need? In other words, freedom of information. There's a philosophical question for you.
I think a lot of it is most elected officials suffer from ADHD, and that they're like scattering all over the place. They don't really focus much on things, and it's hard to get their attention, you know, and there's, you know, 200 members, so, you know, getting a majority of people to, you know, get behind an issue and agree on things is not an easy task, but we've been successful in getting some changes made to the law, you know, last year, and we're hoping to build on that.
More than 200 members. Okay, so what do you do, you know, when you want information and you feel that a government agency is not giving it to you? I've worked both sides of that street, let me tell you. What do you do in order to force it out of them? What would be the first thing you would do, especially if you don't have a lot of money?
Well, the first thing I would do would be to file the administrative appeal, you know, objecting to the fact that you haven't gotten your information. And sometimes the appeal will work in your favor, sometimes not. After that, I would try to maybe interest a local reporter or news entity to maybe, you know, draw some attention to that, because sometimes an article or radio story can help prompt an elected official to make sure the right thing happens. You can contact our group, and we can certainly help by sending additional letters and attention. And, you know, ultimately you may have to sue, and we're trying to get attorneys to take these cases as well without being paid up front and hoping they'll get attorney fees at the end.
Well, who would assign those attorney fees? The judge?
The judge would have to determine that if you won your lawsuit, you have a grounds to ask for the municipality to pay your attorney fees. And sometimes the courts do so, and sometimes they don't. So, but it is a possibility.
And they don't, because I'm just going to take a wild guess here. They're closer to the people who you are trying to get information out of than they are to you.
Well, the reality is, to become a Supreme Court judge in New York State, you have to be politically connected. And many of the, you know, government officials that you would have to impose the attorney fees on may have helped you get into office. So
exactly.
That is certainly an issue.
Exactly. Now, are you an unpopular person yourself, Paul? I mean, are you somebody who, you know, is working for the guys with the white hats on, but the people who are staffing all of this are not happy with you?
I think there are probably some government officials that cringe when they see me or my name. I've been called a gadfly. I've been called a rabble rouser, and I wear those terms proudly.
So why would lawmakers and other public officials support transparency when it often hoists them on their own petards?
Well, the hard part is, when someone runs for office, they're all for transparency.
Absolutely.
Or if they're in the minority party, they're all for transparency. And then things seem to change when they become the majority party. But, you know, there are a few elected officials, I think, that are good, trying to do the right thing. Legislator Amy Paulin has been very helpful in getting open meeting legislation and freedom of information legislation passed. And we just need more elected officials like her. And, you know, hopefully over time we can chip away at it.
Well, that's interesting. So, you know, the average New Yorker, not you, not me, but does the average New Yorker care enough about this transparency stuff and open government to force lawmakers to do anything about it? Or is there a collective ho-hum they're all corrupt attitude on the part of citizens.
There's definitely, you know, a lot of people that they're just a bunch of corrupt politicians. There's nothing you can do about it. I mean, there's certainly a large contingent of folks that feel that way. But there are, you know, a dedicated group of folks that believe, you know, things need to change and can change. And, you know, it's just a matter of continuing to spread the word and get attention and fight the issue. So, you know, it's a long battle, and we, you know, we get some successes here and there and setbacks as well, and just got to keep plugging away.
Well, Paul Wolf, tell me this. You've obviously tried to get information both out of the state legislature and the agencies of government, but also probably out of the federal government. Which does a better job?
I don't have much experience with the federal government. Certainly, there's a lot of problems at the state level. You know, even at the local level, we just did a report recently where we took a look at 18 counties in New York State. Mm-hmm. And to see, are they, we send in a FOIL request to all 18, same day, same time, and track the response. And only 61% acknowledged the request within 5 business days as required by law. I mean, that's a pretty dismal score, no matter how you look at it. The law's been in effect for 45 years. There should be better than 61% compliance at simply acknowledging your request. And then even worse, 28% of the counties we studied just completely ignored it, never responded.
Well, you know, as I've often said, Paul, should be, should be. The fact is, we can say there should be, but there isn't. And does that make you a failure?
No, I don't think so. What we're doing now is laying the groundwork with these reports to push for that we need penalties in the law, that we need an enforcement entity, that clearly what's being done now is not working. But, you know, the first step is to document that, because you always, the pushback is, well, you know, where's the proof? Where's the statistics? I just hear anecdotal stories. Well, what we're doing now is building a record of lack of compliance with the law that will hopefully prompt changes in the law.
Yeah, but still, Paul, and I don't want you to think ill of me, but still, that makes you a failure. You've been around for a while. Are you saying?
Yeah, we've only been around a couple of years.
Well, a couple of years, that's a lot. I mean, we have a government that says they're being responsive to us, and that if we want information, we can get it. And it turns out those two guys are still in front of the urinal.
Well, our first venture into Albany politics was last year, where we were successful in getting 2 new bills passed. So I think that was pretty good for our first effort into Albany legislation. And we're looking to build on that and do some more.
But why would lawmakers and other public officials support transparency, otherwise known as FOIL, when it often puts them in a very bad position themselves? It's where they don't want to be. You know, if they can make trades with lobby groups or with people of power, they don't want guys like you around.
Well, they're, you know, it's a great campaign piece to run on transparency, and many of them do. So we certainly have to hold them accountable when they say that they support it. And that's what we're trying to do and going to continue to push to do.
Okay, I don't want to give you that much of a hard time, although yes, I do. Let's just say, you're talking to average John Q. On the street and say, what do you know about transparency in an open government? The answer is?
Well, I think most people would say that government isn't very transparent, that, you know, the corrupt politicians hide things. And they don't want us to know. So I think, you know, people have some basic understanding of what's going on.
Enough basic understanding to make them coalesce, come together, have open meetings, approach legislators and say, we want changes?
I think so. I think it's growing. I think one of the positive things that during the pandemic was, you know, live streaming of meetings that you saw hundreds and thousands of people observing their governmental meetings, way more people watching meetings on video than ever appeared in person, which shows that the public is interested. And if you make it easy for them to access these meetings, they are interested and they will observe and they will attend. So I think there's been a definite growth and interest in what's happening at local meetings because the technology has assisted people in becoming involved.
Well, there's no question about that. I mean, you know, I live in Massachusetts, but I can turn on the television and see some local meetings being held. I wonder how many other people do, but I can. Another example of closed government, the recent special session of the legislature where gun control legislation and abortion rights legislation were passed. When? On a holiday weekend, with little notice to the public of the details, and that's terrible. It's a terrible way to conduct business, isn't it?
It absolutely is. And again, you know, it was the governor that called the legislature into that special session. It's the governor that says she's committed to transparency. And then, you know, before the voting occurs, none of the legislation is made available to the public. Even legislators were saying they didn't have the bill language. It's just a terrible way to conduct business. And it shouldn't happen that way. And it's the same old story. The new boss is the same as the old boss, it seems.
Well, obviously, you have to lobby for changes in these laws and for governmental agencies to do better. How do you do it? Who do you go to?
Well, we try to identify supportive legislators, which and we have identified a couple, and get them to at least introduce changes in the law. And we've done that. We need to do more of it. And you just, you know, try to build, build a coalition of people to make it happen. You know, any change in the legislature requires, you know, kind of grassroots efforts to put pressure on them. So, you know, there are instances where it's been successful and instances where we just got to keep building on that.
So how about a $10 billion tax break passed at the end of the legislative session for semiconductor chip projects introduced and passed 2 days later without any discussion? The same approach was done to provide $1 billion to the, you remember this one, we all do, the Buffalo Bills. What do you got to say about all of that?
Well, the same guilty suspects engaging in the same, you know, bad behavior. Unfortunately, you know, we shouldn't be throwing around tax dollars like that without, you know, more public disclosure and more public information. It's a horrible way to conduct business. And all, you know, we have to first shine a light on it and complain about it and stamp our feet about it and just, you know, hope that over time we can make a difference.
Well, let's hope that over time we're not all dead because nothing happened.
Okay.
So $8 billion has been set aside for emergencies without any more detail. Is that what the rainy day fund is for? Unexpected, unknown emergencies?
Well, again, this is something, you know, that shouldn't happen. You know, they have the governor put $6 billion aside for public health emergencies and $2 billion aside for, quote, special emergencies, whatever that means. And the governor has the authority to move that money without any review by the New York State Comptroller. And that is certainly...
Which he doesn't like, by the way.
You know, right.
Which my friend and man I respect most in government, Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, they took away his pre-audit powers. So he didn't say, hey, you're standing on the railroad track and the train is coming right at you. He's not allowed to do that anymore.
I agree. Comptroller DiNapoli has been doing a great job at spotlighting these issues. And it's just terrible that they took away his powers to monitor and review, which, you know, clearly, again, trying to keep things in the dark as much as possible.
Well, let me put you on the spot, because I know that you would love to be there. Now, a lot of these powers were taken away by Andrew Cuomo. Not surprising,
right,
based on what we now know. Then added back after Hochul took over and then stripped out of her final budget. So, is Hochul in on it or not?
Hochul claims to be a strong proponent of transparency. I haven't seen it. She's
so
certainly got to do a much better job of backing up her words.
Let me go for 1 minute to the open meetings law. Now, you say it's surprisingly weak. What do you mean, and can you do it in a minute?
What I mean is there are other state laws that are stronger in that they mandate people be allowed to speak at meetings. We don't have that in New York. They mandate penalties for violations of the law. We don't have that in New York. So there's a lot of ways New York's law can be strengthened.
We are just about out of time. We've been talking to Paul Wolf, president of the New York Coalition for Open Government, which is a nonpartisan, not-for-profit organization comprised of journalists, activists, attorneys, educators, news media organizations, and other concerned citizens who value open government and freedom of information. One last thing, Paul Wolf, if I may. How does somebody get in touch with you to get into this whole thing?
You can send me an email to Paul Wolf, W-O-L-F-2, just the number 2, at gmail.com.
Well, I want to encourage people to do it, because if people don't get involved in this effort, it ain't going to happen. It's one of the reasons why we invite Paul every once in a while to come on and talk to us, so that government just doesn't have the facade of being open, but it's indeed open. Again, Paul, I want to thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at NYSUT.org.